Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from Jack and Drea, Kenosha's hometown store since 1911. Their doors may be closed right now, but they have not lost their hometown spirit. Visit jackandrea.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts, and mugs. And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and I feel very, very honored indeed to be able to speak today on the morning show with Dr. Deborah Ford, who is the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. If you listened to the morning show yesterday, you know that her counterpart at Carthage was on the program, Dr. John Swallow, President of Carthage. And you may recall as well that very recently, last week in fact, Brian Albrecht was on as president of Gateway Technical College. So we've had an exciting couple of weeks in terms of connecting with some of the leaders of higher education here in southeastern Wisconsin. Of course, the excitement is tempered by the really serious, troubling events that have unfolded in Kenosha over the last few days. I should say, for the matter of clarity, that this interview is being recorded on Friday afternoon, the 28th of August, but airing on Wednesday, September 1st, which is the first day of classes at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And we will spend plenty of time talking about Parkside itself and this new school year and some of the interesting challenges and opportunities that are rolled up in higher education during a time of COVID. But we do, of course, want to begin with these really serious events in Kenosha. First of all, Chancellor Ford, we welcome you back to the morning show. Thank you for making time for this in what I know is an incredibly busy schedule for you.
Yes, well, Greg, thank you always for the invitation to join you on the morning show and certainly to talk about what is happening in our community and what is happening at UW-Parkside. And certainly my heart, the hearts of our faculty, staff, and students and alumni at UW-Parkside go out to the Kenosha community as we respond and as we recover, as we heal from the events following the shooting of Jacob Blake, and then certainly the destruction that is taking place and has taken place in downtown and uptown. And as we've talked to families this week who are getting ready to come to you, drop off their children at UW-Parkside, we have noted that we're fortunate that the physical impacts have not been at UW-Parkside, but certainly the emotional impacts have. And that's what we need to keep in mind. And we also know that as educators and as community stewards and leaders, we have a role to play in ensuring that folks are heard and that we really begin to address the underlying issues or the systematic issues that are at play here. And I, along with John Swallow, Brian Albrecht, other community leaders are committed to this. We've been working and been attending training programs and community conversations since January to address some of the injustice and the systematic disparities that we have and really to address dismantling racism across our community. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be a quick fix, but it is something we are committed to do. And unfortunately, that's what, or fortunately, we're hearing that, and there's great awareness, but how do we channel that energy as a community? Mm-hmm.
The campus of Parkside, while of course it is in Kenosha, is distinct, in a sense, geographically as to some, maybe a lesser extent, but also the Carthage campus is also, of course, not located geographically in the heart of Kenosha. So given where the Parkside campus is located, how concerned were you and your advisors in terms of whether or not the Parkside campus itself might feel a very direct, tangible impact from all of this? And can you tell us, at least in general terms, about any steps that were taken to try to safeguard your campus and any students and or faculty or staff who are already on campus or have been on campus as these events were unfolding?
Sure. Well, I think one of the most important things is that we continue to monitor any situation that may be occurring in our region and on our campus. Our campus police department was certainly involved in monitoring with other law enforcement officers. But I think the one thing I want to say is that many of our faculty, staff, and students live in the communities and have businesses that are located right where some of the destruction occurred. And so I just want to acknowledge them, because I don't know that anybody prepares and could have been prepared for what we saw unfold earlier this week. Fortunately, it's been calmer, and folks have been protesting and raising their voices about those things that they are most concerned about, and that is how the Black lives of our folks here in our community matter, and also some how do we eliminate some of the injustice in our community. I can tell you that we continue to work with folks across the community, and also as a fully sworn police department, we have had some of our officers involved in supporting the city and the county, and Governor Evers as he has activated folks to be here to keep our community safe. We'll continue to monitor that, and we actually are preparing for our students, because we know that they will want to be engaged and will also want to probably hold a few protests on our campus. And we know that we need to prepare for that as well.
I wonder if you could tell us what has been kind of the nature of these conversations around race and systemic racism within the Parkside community, even ahead of the events that unfolded in the wake of the shooting of Jacob Blake. Have there been particular concerns at Parkside around any, for instance, particular discrepancies or disparities in terms of people of color versus the rest of the student body, or the makeup of faculty staff or whatever? I think it depends on where you are in terms of which concerns are of paramount interest. How has Parkside most often wrestled with this question?
Yeah, Greg, those are great questions. And at UW-Parkside, we are very, very proud that our students of color continue to grow and increase. And about 37% of our students identify as students of color. And that again, has grown at UW-Parkside. But one of the things that we are concerned about is that those students are not completing their degree programs at the same rate. And so we have to do better to help more of our students of color succeed. So we have been having conversations around what is our campus climate? Is our campus climate supportive for this very diverse student body of adult learners, traditional students, students from inner city, students from the rural area, Black, brown, white students, international students. And so we're looking at that. Our faculty, are committed to joining in and part of our curriculum and continuing to look at making sure that our curriculum embodies diversity, inclusion, and equity. And then the one thing I want to highlight is the work of our Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Council. This group of faculty, staff, and students came together in January. They started to develop a framework and a strategic plan that aligns with our strategic framework for the university and our academic plan at UW-Parkside. And then COVID hit. And so it's been a little delayed, but they have been working on it throughout the summer. And as part of this, we have created a Equity and Diversity Inclusion Student Council that's very active and very engaged, and held some listening sessions with them. And this is all being led by Dr. Sharonda Glass, Associate Vice Chancellor for Human Resources and Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion at UW-Parkside. And then just this week, today and yesterday, we've hosted some listening sessions with our faculty and staff so that we can begin to process, unpack, and more importantly, develop a path forward in response to what is happening here in Kenosha. And very proud of what we're doing, but know we need to do more. And that's what we're committed to. And then I guess one more thing, and sorry I keep going on, but there's a lot happening at UW-Parkside. We have our Ranger Restart, which we'll talk about in relation to COVID, but we're trying to create a ways for Rangers to reach out. Because right now, so many community organizations are posting through social media and their own websites how folks can get involved and engaged to help Kenosha and help us clean up, help us recover, help us support one another as neighbors. And so we're really trying to get as much information so that we can share the work that our community partners are engaged in and leading, and how might we partner with them to do that. So we need all Rangers to reach out right now to support one another.
Fantastic. And by the way, when you mentioned the work of that particular task force being slowing down or kind of going on hiatus because of COVID, you are echoing what President Swallow said in the interview that aired yesterday. That was very much the same situation, but they are anxious to get back to work on many of those important matters. For you, I want to ask if you have any perspective you can share on how the UW system as a whole is wrestling with these big questions about racism, systemic racism, disparities in graduation rates and student success and so on, and what you see playing out at various universities across the state, which of course are each their own sort of unique universe in some respects. I mean, plenty of things are still in place, and I'm sure there is not a quarter of the UW system that is blissfully absent of or missing these concerns and injustices. But the way this plays out at a place like UW-Milwaukee versus UW-Stout is probably a bit different. Can you just give us some sense of what this effort looks like across the broad spectrum of UW campuses around the state?
Yes, another great question, right? And being part of the prestigious University of Wisconsin system, I know that we are all committed to improving the outcomes of our students of color. And we know that we have not, I would say, done what we need to do. And I think the first thing is we have to acknowledge that, and we have to look at the data and disaggregate that data for our students of color. And we have to look at it for by race and ethnicity, not just as a group. So disaggregating the data is something we are doing as a system. We also, under the leadership of President Thompson, President Governor Thompson, our new president, he is in the process of hiring a senior diversity officer for system to help us as a university system coordinate these efforts, and also to raise the awareness of the work that we are doing to ensure a campus climate that is welcoming and supportive of our students of color. And then the other thing is President Thompson has announced as part of his biennial budget request, one of the aspects is some additional funding to support minority students so that they can achieve their degree. And so those will be things that we will be advocating for. And I know at UW-Parkside, we have a promise program, and really to help our students, and are always looking for more ways and more scholarship support from friends of the university and alumni to create a pathway for our students. Hmm.
Could you just clarify what you were talking about in terms of the matter of looking at certain statistics and maybe looking at them differently. You were just utilizing some terminology there that I was not, that I'm not directly acquainted with or conversant in.
Right. So one of the things about data, right, is, you know, it's a lot. And if you look at, let's just say, the retention rate of a group of students at a particular institution, you may report one number, and that would be the retention rate of students from first year to second year. But when you disaggregate the data by different populations or different subsets, you begin to see, you could maybe see a different picture. Hmm. And when you disaggregate it by race and ethnicity, at UW Parkside, you would see that African-American students lag behind white students, whereas Hispanic students kind of sit in the middle. And what we want to do is we want to make sure that all of our students are succeeding. But I will say this, when we've been disaggregating the data and looking at this, a few years ago, 2 years in a row, our students of color, their retention rate actually exceeded that of their white counterparts. We call that the achievement gap or performance gap. And Greg, what we try to do is, you know, we need to look at those numbers, not just at the total. So disaggregating the data is so important at times like this.
Interesting. So in other words, the numbers at a glance or in total tell us one thing, but then there is the possibility of looking at the numbers in a different sort of way that can bring about greater clarity with the specific.
Absolutely. Hmm. Absolutely. And I would also add here is, this is not something UW Parkside does alone. We're doing this across higher ed. Building Our Future, led by Tatiana Buchanan, is bringing that information to the leadership table and other community partners when we look at the performance outcomes for students in K-12 as well as higher ed. So we're committed to doing that here.
One other question I would like to ask you about this, and first a sort of a mini preliminary question. Do I remember that before you came to Parkside, you were at a school in Florida?
Yes.
Okay. And are you also, do you have more personal background than that in terms of being in the South? I don't remember if you're from the South originally or if lived in other places in the South.
Yes. I grew up in Kentucky.
The question I want to ask you, I guess the day we're recording this on the 28th of August is the day when many people are remembering Martin Luther King and his I Have a Dream speech. And one of the things that I think so often about with Dr. King's work is how, for all of the terrible difficulties and barriers and challenges that he confronted in the South, that there were all kinds of other challenges and barriers that he confronted in the North. And some of those challenges were among the most painful of his career in terms of being where he felt the most discouragement, because in many cases he was confronting issues of racism that were much less obvious, that did not involve or seldom involved, you know, burning crosses on someone's front yard, but other kinds of racism that were just as embedded and could be just as serious in terms of the barriers that they create and the injustice that they perpetuated. I'm just curious, as someone who has lived and worked in the South, if that distinction means something to you, if you have, in a sense, seen that, and maybe could you say a word about how you think some of these issues are being wrestled with and explored in places in other parts of the country where perhaps these issues are experienced in at least slightly different ways.
Yeah, and I think, thank you for, you know, reminding me of this moment in history with Martin Luther King and the I Have a Dream speech. And I think it might be an opportunity for all of us to go back and maybe read a little bit more about that and actually reread the speech. But in terms of, you know, living in the panhandle of Florida, living in Louisville, Kentucky, and now living here in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where I have that frame of reference would be the institutions where I have been involved. And I can share that at Spalding University in Louisville, Kentucky, We are urban institution. We had a commitment to serve diverse students. The Sisters of Charity who founded the institution and still run that today, I believe they were some of the among the first to admit African-American students into the institution when that was not something that other colleges and universities were doing. And so for me, I have been affiliated with organizations that have always valued diversity and inclusion and equity. And so I'm fortunate that way. I think it's something we wrestle with, Peg, at the University of West Florida in the Panhandle of Florida. We had good fortune to have one of our commencement speakers, one of the folks who marched with Martin Luther King, experienced firsthand the civil rights marches and the fight 50 years ago. And to be there with him, it was an amazing experience to hear his stories and how he shared that with our graduates, but also with other students and faculty and staff. And so I think it's about the conversations. It's about the dignity and respect. It's about willingness to open your mind that is so important right now. Unfortunately, all of our communities are wrestling with tough issues, but it's going to take all of us to continue to wrestle to make it better.
For those of you just joining us, my guest on the morning show today is Dr. Deborah Ford, who is the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, Gateway's neighbors to the north, right up Wood Road. And we've been speaking, of course, about issues related to racism, systemic racism, and some of the ways in which the UW-Parkside community specifically is already and going to continue to wrestle with and confront some of these really vexing and important issues related to race. Of course, if this fall semester wasn't challenging enough, of course, it is also beginning under the shadow of COVID-19. And this is a challenge not unique by any means to Parkside, but colleges and universities and every level of education are confronting challenges related to this. First of all, Chancellor Ford, the basic calendar of the school, did anything change for the fall semester, or basically calendar-wise, is it business as usual?
At this point, Greg, we are business as usual, and we plan to open our campus on Wednesday, September 2nd.
So the day this is airing, yes.
The day that I will be on the air, which is great. And we, at this point, intend to complete our semester in December, not end it earlier.
So you have already spoken on the morning show earlier in the summer, I believe with your provost, about the extensive and complicated planning that is involved in sorting out just how all of this can be implemented, a reality in which there will be some in-person education and some done virtually. And we had an interesting conversation with your vice provost as well, Gary Wood, talking about some of the specifics. Now, on the eve of this new school year, a school year that begins as people are hearing this interview, what can you tell us, first of all, about how those preliminary plans have played out? I mean, your overall goals as this all began, are those relatively intact, or have you had to drastically shift strategies as the school year approached?
I would say, again, our overall goals remain the health, ensuring the health and safety of our learning community, our academic mission, and also doing our part to reduce the spread of COVID-19. And I would say that since I was last with you, that our strategies remain intact and are probably even more refined as we get closer to the start of the semester. But one thing we have learned about 2020 is we need to be nimble, agile, adaptable, flexible, and in the learning mode, because oftentimes we have to pivot as we learn something new or as the situation may change. And Community Parkside, 62% of our courses will be offered virtually, and 32% will either be face-to-face or hybrid. As I said, we begin on Wednesday, September 2nd, but we will begin to welcome our new residential students starting tomorrow, which is Saturday. So by the time this airs, our residential students will be here and ready to go.
Remind us of how many students live on the campus of Parkside, and tell us about some of what has been done in terms of that specific facet of the Parkside campus, the dorms. Have the dorms themselves been altered in any way, or the means by which the students are living there, has that been changed in any way for the sake of student safety?
Yeah, so a couple things there. One, we will expect anywhere from 4,000 to probably 4,500 students, and about just between 550 and 600 living on campus. And in our residence halls, some students will have roommates, some students will be in single rooms. We have reserved rooms for both quarantine and isolation in case students come down with COVID-19. We are encouraging them, if they can, to go home for that time period, but we have provisions. We have also putting in cleaning protocols and lots of signage. We have also centralized some of our services into one of our buildings rather than across the three buildings. And the team in residence life we've changed our check-in process. So students have been able to drop off their belongings over the past several weeks with folks to help them move in. And then they will start checking in, they will get their key. But at this time, there will be no visitors allowed in the residence halls, again, to reduce the spread of COVID-19. They will be required to wear their mask in public areas and going to and from, but obviously do not have to wear their mask in their individual rooms. And as our Dean of Students said during a recent Zoom meeting with parents, he said, we are encouraging students to take off their mask to brush their teeth. And, little things like that. And we are working to do with the support of some funding from Governor Evers and UW System Administration is antigen testing, some screening testing in our residence halls. And we are working to acquire the right equipment and the testing kits, and then hope to start that early in the semester. One more thing that's important for families out there is that our student health center continues to be in regular, if not daily, contact with Kenosha County Health Department. They have been a wonderful resource for us, and we will be doing PCR COVID-19 testing for students who have symptoms as well. So another service in our commitment to help reduce the spread of COVID-19.
Fantastic. I wanted to ask, and this is a question that you get asked a lot in these interviews, because it's a kind of a striking difference between Parkside and Carthage in that you are part of the UW system. So for instance, the decisions that you were just making, just telling us about regarding, for instance, dorms and student life and that kind of thing, were those decisions that were entirely yours to make, or have there been any system-wide policies put into place that Parkside needs to follow?
One of the great things about the University of Wisconsin system is the diversity of the system and how unique we are in really supporting the local communities and regions that we serve, even though we serve the whole state and beyond. But that is one of the unique attributes. And I have found, and I would say my colleague chancellors would say, that we are responsible for making those decisions with our leadership teams and in consultation with our faculty and staff and with input from our students. So the decisions are made at the local level, but there is a lot of guidance and support from UW System Administration. So they are helping us to acquire the right resources. They are helping us where where we need to have similar or the same policies and practices. So we have regular phone calls with UW System Administration, and I would say they are providing excellent guidance and excellent support during this time of COVID-19.
Very good. Let's talk about the matter of the actual teaching, and you've already touched on the fact that it will be at Parkside, as I think it is in a lot of places, certainly at Carthage, a mixture of teaching in person with virtual teaching / learning. Give our listeners a little sense of how that's going to work or what that's going to look like. Because I think from the outside looking in, it might be kind of a tricky thing to imagine.
Yeah, so for our students learning virtually, and some of them are going to have a full complement of virtual courses, some are going to have a mix of virtual and face-to-face. And for the virtual learners, we use Canvas as our learning management system, and we have tutorials and all kinds of resources, and built into Canvas is a 24/7 response. So if they have questions and they're working in the middle of the night, their professor's not available, they can still get answers, at least how to use the technology. So we have provided a number of resources for virtual learning. For students that are going to be face-to-face and or blended, the classrooms have all been socially distanced, and the faculty students will be required to wear a mask in the classroom and inside our campus buildings and outside where it's not possible to be socially distant. Faculty and staff will be wearing masks and or face shields with mask, or UW-Madison has developed a face shield called the Badger Shield Plus, which has a, you know, a shroud underneath. And so it really protects the faculty member as well as the members of the class. Because we needed some space on campus, we have converted our ballroom and our cinema into instructional space to accommodate larger classes. And we have also identified a number of classrooms that were smaller and could not be used for teaching, but they will be used for students to go where they have a face-to-face class at, let's say, 9 a.m. and a virtual class at 10:15. They certainly can't get to their residence hall or back home. And so we have identified space for them to open up their laptops, open up their Surface or whatever device they are using, and to be able to engage in their learning. And then we've also identified some spaces for study and for faculty to reserve to do office hours. Our offices are small at UW Parkside, and so we want to make sure that faculty and students can gather. Those are a few of the changes that you would immediately see if you were to visit campus.
This is a question that probably would be better posed to someone on your engineering staff, but I'm just curious, as we all know, COVID is an airborne virus. I mean, and that is certainly the primary means by which this is contracted. With the air that we breathe, and when we share air in close proximity, particularly indoors with others, that is much more of a threat than, for instance, you know, the can of beans you buy at the grocery store. That kind of contact is not the serious threat that we should be the most worried about. I'm just curious about the Parkside facility itself, which at a glance looks so new and so beautiful, so timeless in a sense, but it's been around for a long time. Did very much have to be done to the facility itself when it comes to matters of air exchange to make certain spaces as safe?
This is a monthly test of the Southeast and South Central Wisconsin Emergency Alert System. In the event of an emergency, this system would bring you important information. This test is now concluded.
So We have our normal summer and preparations for fall. We have COVID, and we also have a big construction project that is disrupting life. But that project will also help with the overall, you know, air exchange ventilation on campus.
I wanted to mention a really interesting moment in my conversation with your vice provost, Dr. Gary Wood. A lot of our conversation was around the whole matter of teaching spaces, the rooms where courses take place. And one observation that Dr. Wood made that I don't think would ever have occurred to me is the fact that you have fancy lecture halls with permanent seating, permanent seats, and then you have classrooms that look, in a sense, much more humble with just plain old chairs and maybe some tables. But in this time of COVID, those are the rooms with which you can really work, because you can move things around the way you want them. And some of these more impressive spaces, and certainly they're at Carthage and at Gateway as well, are much more problematic. And so that's one of the realities that that people are wrestling with and trying to figure out how many classes can be accommodated and where. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. So think about an auditorium. Think about the large lecture halls at UW Parkside, the fixed seating. You're having to measure where they can sit. Then you have to tape off rows. And students, they want to sit where they want to sit, right? And so you're trying to guide them to say, no, you can't sit here. And then there's another dimension. For contact tracing purposes, we will be asking our faculty to take attendance and to do a seating chart, so that if someone in a class tests positive, then for COVID-19, if they meet the contact tracing criteria as a close contact, we can certainly notify them. So there's so many provisions that we need to think about in order to keep our campus community healthy and safe. Then all of the furniture in the concourse, and Greg, you're a frequent visitor and you're always welcome at UW Parkside. We have great furniture because so many of our commuters use the large concourse and the seating areas, but we have signs on these, please do not sit here. We have things on the tables, don't sit across from each other. So we're really gonna, as we interact face to face, we have to think about how we do things differently while we are confronting COVID-19 as the virus.
So for instance, the seating you were just talking about, it's not that it is eliminated altogether, but that you are limiting it in a significant way, so you don't have, so you might have two students sitting together at some distance rather than 10 students clustered together tightly as they would so often do under normal circumstances.
That's right, that's right. But let's think about this. Human nature is to come together. So it's going to be hard, and folks haven't seen each other for 6 months, and the end of the spring semester was just, it ended so quickly, and we're ready to be together, but we really want folks to check their symptoms. Don't come to campus if you have symptoms, because we don't want you to spread whatever you might have. Wear your mask, wash your hands, and watch your distance. We know that those are things that actually help reduce the spread of COVID-19. And if we can all do those things together, maybe we will get through this semester and be able to deliver our academic mission.
A last question about COVID. And this is, I asked President Swallow this exact same question. I'm slightly reworded, I'm sure. But we have seen the headlines, of course, of certain notable colleges and universities, those that opened earlier than, for instance, Parkside or Carthage, that were forced to either shut down or backtrack or whatever. I mean, drastically changed their plans because of spikes in COVID. One of the things that's kind of frustrating for just a general member of the public is, of course, that attracts news, that's headline-making news, but that perhaps is not the whole story. And you're probably in a better position than most of us to know about other colleges or universities that are managing to open successfully and safely. What insight can you share with the rest of us in terms of what this looks like overall? And are there, in a sense, success stories that are not making the front page of the newspaper that that give you some hope and encouragement that this can be done?
Well, I certainly believe that there are success stories out there, and colleges and universities are able to successfully continue in whatever mode that they have selected. I think at UW-Parkside, as we have developed our plans, we have thought about what fits best with our learning community. And again, 62% of our courses will be offered virtually, 38% face-to-face or hybrid. But I also know that our faculty and staff are ready to adapt if we have to make changes for whatever reason. And we might have a case in a classroom that may impact a particular classroom, but it may not affect the whole institution. And I think what we have to do is continue that, understand how the virus may be impacting or tracking at UW-Parkside, and have alternative plans and be ready for plan A, B, and C to implement. But I do think, Greg, based on what we know today, and I'm not an expert in this, I'm just reading and learning as everyone else, but if we do the things that have been, you know, suggested, wearing our mask, washing our hands, watching our distance, keeping the size of groups down, and monitoring our symptoms, we can succeed in delivering our mission in the way that we want to at UW-Parkside. But it's going to take all of us, and we're going to have to change some of the things we really like to do, like congregate and hug and all of that, because right now it's a global pandemic. It's a public health issue, and it's not something that we've dealt with in over 100 years, and we're all learning.
In the last 5 minutes or so that remain, I want to give you a chance to talk about any new programs or anything else new and exciting beyond all that is absorbing so much of our time and attention right now.
Yeah, so thank you, Greg. Thank you so much for having me today to talk about, you know, the important issues of social justice and the challenges that we are facing here in Kenosha, but also what's happening at UW-Parkside and our preparations related to COVID-19. One of the things that we have been monitoring all summer has been our enrollment. And at this point in time, again, this is a little before the first day of class, our enrollment is trending ahead of where it was last year. Transfer students, we see an increase in transfer students and in our graduate students. Our residential students and our first-time freshmen are down a little bit, but we'll continue to monitor that and report on that very soon. But I wanted to mention a brand new program that we have at UW-Parkside. It was just approved by the Board of Regents, I believe that was 2 weeks ago. No, last week, actually. Last week was the Master's in Professional Communication. And so this is the first graduate program to be offered by the College of Arts and Humanities. And now every college at UW-Parkside is now offering a graduate degree. And so we are thrilled with the growth in our graduate programs. And many of these are online. The Master's in Professional Communication will be offered online. And I would encourage your listeners to visit the UW-Parkside website, www.uwp.edu, and go to admissions, and you can see information about all of our programs, undergraduate and graduate.
I imagine that with all of these special circumstances, that this was not much of a summer off for you, and not just for you, but some of your closest advisors, for whom, I mean, I don't think most people that do what you do have the summer off, but you've probably never had a summer quite like this one in your entire academic career. Am I right?
That is correct. And a few of us have been able to take a day or two, but of course, folks have not been able to take the vacation that we try to take in the summer. I'll be encouraging my colleagues to take some time off when it is appropriate. I too hope to take some time off. I took one day this summer because my daughter got married. And so it was amidst all of this, there is a lot of great joy as we welcomed our son-in-law to our family.
Well, congratulations to them and to you. And Chancellor Ford, I really appreciate you taking the time in what I know is just an incredibly busy time of the year, under even the most normal of circumstances, but under all of the special pressures and stresses that are what we are facing right now. You're very kind to make time for the morning show, and as events warrant, we look forward to further conversations with you on the morning show. Thank you so much, and best wishes to you and everybody who is part of the UW Parkside community.
Thank you, Greg. Always enjoy being a part of your show, and anytime we can come together, let's do it.
Tomorrow on the morning show, we're going to be talking with Sarah Kovner about her fascinating new book called Prisoners of the Empire, Inside Japanese POW Camps. In mid-August, we observed the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II in the Pacific Theater, and that coincides nicely with the publication of Kovner's book, in which she examines what has been a troubling question ever since World War II, namely why Allied POWs were treated so brutally by their Japanese captors. As it turns out, that was not always the case. Unmistakably, that sometimes was the case, but in many other cases, Allied POWs were treated actually quite humanely. Why the wide variance? And in those cases where Allied POWs were treated brutally, what was the cause of that brutality? There are some surprising and interesting answers to that question, which Sarah Kovner explores in her book. We'll talk with her tomorrow on the morning show. Friday's morning show will include a conversation with Jennifer Sassaman, a former member of the theater faculty at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and two of her theater friends who have co-created a new podcast called Read More Plays, which is designed to, in a sense, do exactly that, in which they read brand new scripts of brand new plays and then discuss them together and invite all of us to kind of think about what makes a good play, what makes a good script. I'm very excited to be speaking with her about that on Friday's morning show. We want to remind you as well that the morning show is actually available to you 7 days a week if you subscribe to the morning show podcast. You should subscribe looking for the title, The Morning Show with Greg Berg. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, all the major podcast provider platforms. Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from Jack and Drea, Kenosha's hometown store since 1911. Their doors may be closed right now, but they have not lost their hometown spirit. Visit jackandrea.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts, and mugs. It's exactly 9.